Once again, I have Tara Solem on the phone with me. She was not able to come in, and we do not have Sherry Wallace, as I promised with you from the Partners in Policymaking, because of our limited technology here at the station, but we will get her on another time. Meantime, we have Tara here with us via phone. Thank you, Tara, for being with us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. And when I realized that you are the same person as the person who does the Lake County Soil and Water, I immediately felt like, wow, this is a woman who gets around. And I really think it's going to be fun to hear about this, more of your, a little bit more of your personal journey, I guess, is what this is. But so you are involved with the Partners in Policymaking, centered around issues of children with disabilities. And do you want to just share a little bit about how you heard about this and how you got involved, and what is your involvement exactly?
Yeah, this is what I do on my free time.
So yeah, all that free time.
Great purpose. Partners in Policymaking has been around for 40 years, and every year they do a new cohort. They gather 35 to 40 people within the state of Minnesota to represent both parents of children with disabilities, but also half of the class is people with disabilities within the state of Minnesota. And they really focus on having a diverse, rich community of people gathered by racial, cultural, you know, male, female.
Yep.
And it's just a really rich, diverse group.
Yeah.
And the purpose is to learn about advocacy, the rights of people, no matter, you know, what ability you have. And I'm just trying to get out of that institution kind of mindset of we need to segregate people with disabilities. But in fact, we need to, it just makes everybody's lives better to get them in the community and gather together.
Yeah, right. And so you have a child with a disability. Do you want to just share as much of that story as you want to share so that you we put you in context here?
Yeah, sure. When I was 36 years old, I was considered advanced maternal age, and the doctors asked if I wanted to do a blood test. And I think it was like on the first trimester, so it was really early, and I did. And it is a chromosome test, and the mother's blood indicates what the fetal, the child's, you know, makeup will be. And so I found out that she was going to be a girl, which was really cool that early. But I also found out that she would have Down syndrome. And so that was good for me just to be prepared to know what, you know, I needed to plan for, what I needed to consider. And it was also good for, because I think there's a mourning process for all the parents that have children with disabilities.
Yes.
Just because you have a vision in your head of what it's going to be, or what you, you know, foresee the future.
Right.
But that kind of blows it all out of the water. And you
right.
just learn to take it day by day and take it as is and adapt accordingly.
So now your daughter is?
Now she's 7.
Okay.
She's a very vibrant, living large. I call her, her name is Haven. I call her Boss Havy, Baby Spice. That kind of indicates that she's a very strong-willed, determined girl, which is going to do her well.
Yes.
But parenting, a stubborn girl who probably takes after her mom. So just like the other 7-year-olds, she loves to play with dolls. She loves, you know, people. I joke to everybody, I'm like, how did an extrovert like myself get like the opposite end, biggest introvert?
Interesting.
Yeah. So she loves people. She loves interaction. She is just in the moment, you know, and it's a lot of fun seeing her. Oh, she's the funniest too. So lots of positive, lots of really fun things, being a parent, you know, of Haven. But there are some traits that come with Down syndrome that just to be aware of, you know, low muscle tone. So that takes us longer to get places, or, you know, just to more encourage her of like, we need to, you know, we want to go for a hike, or we're going to go out. Transitions are hard, you know, that goes along with sensory, you know, like loud noises.
Yeah.
Things like that are too much. For instance, like at her Christmas, her Christmas song thing at the school, she wore earmuffs because that was an accommodation just to keep her calm so that that outside loud noises wouldn't be too much for her.
Yeah.
And then she also you know, behaviorally, she has challenges where she gets amped up or she gets upset, she has big emotions. And so those are, you know, also traits of just a typical 7-year-old, but I think it's just more enhanced. So those are considerations I need to make.
Yeah. And then to return a little bit to the partners and policymaking, so far, like, how has it been? And have you learned any, like, jaw-dropping things? Or have you found ways to make a difference that hadn't been there before? Or just, yeah, what's the result so far of being involved with that group?
Yeah, it's been great. We're on the third session, I think, out of 10 or 12. So we're only a third of the way in. But they're monthly 2-day events in the cities where we all get together. Some of the topics have been disability rights, you know, going back to
ADA.
Just all of the laws that were made. Yeah, ADA back in the past. And then communication is really important. I think a lot of us are either defeated or we might be, meaning a lot of us individuals representing people with disabilities might feel frustrated. And so just learning how to communicate our needs, you know, and be heard rather than just shut out.
Yes.
There was also Department of Education that presented a lot of, you know, leadership type of training, because I, you know, the intent of this program is to have people all over the communities, all over the state of Minnesota, being a voice to decision makers and also representing, you know, others with disabilities, so that we can make a change and we can get things good for everybody, whether it's in the workplace, education, transportation, accessibility within building, all of those things matter.
Right. And I'm sure you've had your ups and your downs. Do you have any stories that come to mind immediately of sort of the importance of how to be accessible, or maybe even cautionary tales of not helpful remarks? Or I mean, you've been at this for 7 years now.
Yeah. Luckily, I had a lot of exposure to people with disabilities, both in, you know, in school when we were growing up. People with disabilities were segregated. Like, you had no exposure to anybody different than yourself.
Yeah.
But I selectively would go seek out people that were different because I just thought it was so fascinating.
Yeah.
So the interest was there. My parents were both social workers, and then I worked at a group home. So I knew kind of what I was getting into, and I just knew how vibrant and unique this population is and how fun, you know, you can have. And it's no different than anybody else. It's just a trait.
Yeah.
So I'm very intentional about getting Haven into the community. It takes a lot of work and a lot of planning.
Yes.
To go to the grocery store. It's not like just let's go to the grocery store and we're there and we get our job done. But I'm intentional about exposing her to the community. She needs to know how to act behaviorally. You know, it's fun for her. She needs to just be a part of the community, but also it's good for other people, you know, the community to see people with disabilities.
Right.
And it is a lot more work. And I think, you know, there's a lot of parents that just choose to run to the store themselves, and that's fine. But I want her to know what it's like, and I want other people to know. Being that introvert, she wants to say hi to everybody. She wants to engage in conversation.
Yeah.
So I've been, you know, trying to bridge that up. Like, hey, we can say hi, but we got to move on.
Yeah.
So it's really important. A simple hi back, or just a smile, or an acknowledgement is really special to her.
Yeah.
Whether also we're at the playground and there's parents that are encouraging them to play with my daughter, or engage in, you know, conversation or play. I can translate if it's difficult, you know, for them to understand her. But I appreciate the community offering activities that everyone's involved and can be included. And also, yeah, just all those people that are really great souls out there that include others and realize the value and importance of that.
Yeah, you sound like just a great mother, I gotta say. I mean, for anybody. And, you know, I think when you have a child, you know, you're, the love is pretty much infinite, and it just brings you to a new level of what is possible and what is even brings a lot of joy. And I can hear that in your voice. So that's really fun to hear. I'm curious about, like, school is a huge part of a 7-year-old's life. You know, how that has gone You mentioned that, you know, there are definitely accommodations like wearing earmuffs. I know it can be really loud over there at the Minnehaha. So any more comments about school? Is she in the normal grade age-wise, or what's her situation there?
Yeah, she's in first grade along with typical age peers. I kind of regret, you know, now I'm thinking, oh, maybe she should have gone to kindergarten. And that's just a constant thing of, you know, being a parent. We're doubting ourselves left and right about stuff.
Right.
And the reason why I bring that up is because the gap does get larger. You know, I think, like, skill-wise, she's probably on that preschool kindergarten level, and it's just going to take her longer to learn the things because it just goes with the territory.
Yeah.
But also there's that balance of she loves people. She should not be isolated in a separate room with other kids with disabilities and behaviors because I just don't see her thriving that way.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the dance and balance that I've been having with the school, and I think a lot of parents are, of questioning, you know, what are the requirements? What do we need to do? But also knowing that each of our children are individuals, and Haven loves people, and all those facts about her that I mentioned make it really important for her to be in her classroom as much as possible and really striving and asking and pushing the school to be able to provide what they need to help her learning advance in the classroom where she can just be a typical 7-year-old.
Right. How much of the time is she in the classroom right now, would you say, like estimating?
Yeah, we had an IEP meeting, which is like an individual education program, and those are all part of MDA, Department of Education. Each child that has a special need or is in special ed has one, and so you meet once a year to discuss goals and figure out plans. We just had Haven's on Monday. And they were pushing towards having her, you know, in the special ed room majority of the day, and I pushed back and said, no, she needs to. But then one thing that I did reflect on and learn is, like, yeah, the gap is getting larger. She needs that one-on-one learning, you know, from her special ed teacher. How can we make it work to make, you know, Haven and my requests known of she needs to be in the classroom, but also that that gap doesn't get bigger and that she has that individually one-on-one educational nurturing experience. So we're going to try some things, and I'm willing to give a little bit, but I think it's possible to have her in the classroom as much as possible because it's good for her peers, it's good for her. And right now, she's the IEP says that she'd be in the special ed room 1 hour a day. So pretty minimal, you know, then she has speech, OT, physical therapy. So there's other things that she's pulled out for, but she is luckily in the classroom majority of the time. And having that classroom teacher support you, your desires, and your child is super important. And luckily, our classroom teacher is supportive of that, too.
Yeah. Because
it is a lot more work for that classroom teacher to accommodate or, you know, have behaviors prop up or something. So I get the whole picture, but I think just having that dialogue and trying new things is really important. So I'm willing to talk through that with anyone in the community. There's resources out there. Yeah, it's okay to question some of the authority or the people who have, you know, the training to make it work for your child and your situation.
Yes, I would think that having a beloved TA or PCA or whoever it is one-on-one over many years would make a huge difference. Is that just realistic? Is that something that Haven has? Like, does she... I would think that would just be so good if it could happen.
Yeah, she does have, at the school, there's para professionals. They're called paras. And most of the kids that have significant needs have a one-on-one in the classroom. So not only, you know, the teacher, there's someone, you know, with them throughout the day. And she has two paras. Usually they have a different one in the morning versus the afternoon. And if it weren't for them, sometimes I'd be losing my mind because they love her, they care for her, they want the best for her, and they really try to bridge that and make accommodations for her. And then on our personal life, you know, she doesn't really, there are great daycares in town, and I have one that I bring her to once in a while, but, you know, being 7 now, it doesn't necessarily mesh with all the schedules of daycare. But anyways, we do have a PCA hours that are set aside from Department of Human Services.
Yep.
And so each child, you know, based on their needs, has a certain allotted amount of PCA hours, and we also have a really great PCA. So just having that community of services is wonderful.
Yeah, really fun to hear it just from one mother's mouth. And I know in the Lake County Press, there's a column written by Jenna Udenberg, who is constantly bringing up sort of disability issues and awareness. And
yeah.
I've learned a lot from that column, and I'm learning a lot from this interview. And I think just stories are so, it really is just not on the radar necessarily unless it is brought to the radar. And yet so important for it to, for just people to be aware, and whether it's just a little helping hand or a smile, like you say, or any of that. Tara, is there anything I forgot to ask? Our time is winding up, but would love to make sure we cover all the bases.
No, you know, I'm here for any questions. Like I said, I'm a resource for the community. Anybody at any time can ask me questions from the disability realm or, you know, just in the community.
Yeah, what's the best way to contact you?
They could email me. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you can just give whatever contact you're comfortable with over the phone, or we can ask people to just call the station if they want to get a hold of you.
Yeah, they could call or they could email me at it's azrajula3@gmail.com, and I'll spell that out. azrajula3@gmail.com.
Wonderful. And they can also, as a backup, always call the station, and we will make sure you to connect people. Love to make
connections. And I'm on Facebook, too.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Wonderful. And let's just review again. The program is called Partners in Policymaking. It's in its 40th year. And our very own Tara Solemn from Two Harbors is representing us there. So that's pretty cool. And we will we'll have Sherry on at a future time with you to support also Tara, hopefully, and talk a little bit more about that whole program. But for now, thank you so much and have a warm and safe holiday.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Tara Solemn with Partners in Policymaking. She is a mother of a child with Down syndrome and had lots of wonderful things to say about her experiences.